Okay, a very good afternoon to all, brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. Now is 2nd of July, 2nd July 2017 today. So this is the 50th platform sutta, 6-page platform sutta class. And we will now commence our puja. So let us compose our mind, develop the spiritual faculty of sadha, virya, then mindfully we shall commence our puja. Namo Bổn Sư Thích Ca Mâu Ni Phật. Namo Bổn Sư Thích Ca Mâu Ni Phật. Namo Bổn Sư Thích Ca Mâu Ni Phật. Namo Quan Sư Yên Phụ Sa. Namo Quan Sư Yên Phụ Sa. Namo Quan Sư Yên Phụ Sa. Namo Phổ Phụ Sa. Namo Phổ Phụ Sa. Namo Phổ Phụ Sa. Arahang Samma Sambuddho Bhagava Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivademi. Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namasami. Supatipanno Bhagavato Savakasangho Sanghang Namami. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa. Buddhang Saranang Gacchami. Dhammang Saranang Gacchami. Sanghang Saranang Gacchami. Dutiyampi Buddhang Saranang Gacchami. Dutiyampi Dhammang Saranang Gacchami. Dutiyampi Sanghang Saranang Gacchami. Tatiyampi Buddhang Saranang Gacchami. Tatiyampi Dhammang Saranang Gacchami. Tatiyampi Sanghang Saranang Gacchami. Panatipata Viramani Sikkhapadang Samadhiyami. Adinadana Viramani Sikkhapadang Samadhiyami. Kamesu Michachara Viramani Sikkhapadang Samadhiyami. Musavada Viramani Sikkhapadang Samadhiyami. Suramiraya Majapamadatana Viramani Sikkhapadang Samadhiyami. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, let us pay respect to Tripa Jema. Buddhang Pujemi. Dhammang Pujemi. Sanghang Pujemi. Okay. You all can be seated. Then turn to page 1. Huh? Verse for opening a sutta. The unsurpassed, profound, and wonderful Dhamma is difficult to encounter in hundreds of millions of aeons. I now see and hear it, receive and uphold it, and I vow to fathom the Tathagata's true meaning. Okay, then turn to page 246. We were at page 246 of the Sixth Paitriya Platform Sutta. It is chapter 6. We are on the chapter Repentance and Reform. So page 246, we go direct to the sutta. What is the perfect full reward body of the Buddha? Just as one lamp can disperse the darkness of 1,000 years, one thought of wisdom can destroy 10,000 years of delusion. Do not think of the past, it is gone and can never be recovered. Instead, think always of the future, and in every thought, perfect and clear, see your own original nature. Although good and evil differ, the original nature is non-dual. That non-dual nature is the real nature, undefiled by either good or evil. It is the perfect, full reward body of the Buddha. One evil thought arising from the self nature destroys 10,000 aeons worth of good karma. One good thought arising from the self nature ends evil as numerous as the sand grains in the Ganges River. To reach the unsurpassed Bodhi directly, see it for yourself in every thought and do not lose the original thought. This is the reward body of the Buddha. So this is according to the sutta. You all understand the reward body, like because of your ability to do well, you will be rewarded something. So this reward body is the result of your perfection, your cultivation. All of the hard work that you have done. So it's just like the three phases of Dhamma. You remember the three phases of Dhamma? Phase one is what? Pariyatti. We go through this, then you will understand. So the three phases of Dhamma is the same. Three phases of Dhamma. So Dhamma has to be cultivated over three phases. Phase one is Pariyatti. Pariyatti means the learning of the teaching. The learning. Learning of the teaching. Or sometimes they use the word doctrine. The teaching. So phase one is most important. You have to understand this. If you don't understand the teaching, you cannot move on to phase two. But a lot of people don't understand this principle. They did the mistake. They don't try to understand what it is. They straight away go to meditation or practice. So the Buddha says phase two of Dhamma is to put what you have learned into practice. And that is very important. So they call pati. Is the spelling correct? Right? Double T at the end. This one doesn't mean you go and party and party. That one is the English one. This one is the Pali one. So phase two of Dhamma is to put the teaching into practice. So to put it into practice, you must understand the teaching. Otherwise, you cannot. That's why meditation is to be done with understanding. So this part two or phase two is essentially meditation. Then meditation is to develop wisdom, awakening. So when you meditate, you try to develop wisdom. So meditation is to develop wisdom. And according to the Buddha, there are three types of wisdom that can be developed. So wisdom, there are three types. And the Buddha broke it down into... So this wisdom, there are three types. First type is Sutamaya Panya. And what is Sutamaya Panya? Wisdom born of what? Hearing the sutta. That's why it's called Sutamaya Panya. Means wisdom born of hearing the sutta. But nowadays, because of our advancement in civilization, at that time, during the Buddha's time, there is no writing. There is no recording. So now, Sutamaya Panya, or wisdom born of hearing the sutta, can also be what they call expanded on. You not only have to be born during the Buddha's time when he proclaimed the Dhamma, the truth. You can listen to all the recorded teaching. Means you can read from book, or you can allow other people to read it to you, or you can play the recorded teaching. So this Sutamaya Panya can be expanded, so you can read on the teaching, so that you can develop your own understanding. Or you can listen to Dhamma talk or the recorded audio file, recorded file, and even video file and other things. And the second type is, the Buddha said, Cintamaya Panya, wisdom born of reflection, contemplation, and inquiry. After you have heard the sutta or read about it, for some who don't have the past parami or what they call past life cultivation, you may not awaken straight away, because this first turning wisdom is not easy. So this one is first turning wisdom. And this one is second turning. Then you have the third one, the third turning. So first turning wisdom is born of hearing the sutta or discourse as expounded. or proclaimed by the Buddha. Then nowadays we can read about it, we can listen to audio file and other things. Then Chinnamaya Panya is after you have gone through the first turning, if you cannot develop the wisdom and the understanding, then you can develop the contemplative wisdom. You can reflect on it, contemplate on it, and inquire into all this teaching that the Buddha taught. Why did he taught this way? Why did he say, like the first noble truth, reality, birth, old age, sickness, and death is suffering? Why? Then under the second turning, because there are four noble truths, and there are three turnings to the four noble truths. First turning, he just proclaimed the teaching. If you can understand, straight away you awaken. These are for people with good past cultivation, good karmic inheritance. But when they come to second turning, the Buddha turned the four noble truths differently. All the four truths, he used different emphasis. For the first noble truth, the second turning, he said, this noble truth of suffering, which is the first noble truth, is to be, what is it? Is to be what? Understood. Then you inquire, why did the Buddha say this? Then how can I understand this? Then you reflect on it, contemplate on it. As you reflect and contemplate on what you have heard and read, then you develop deeper understanding. As you reflect and contemplate, you can assimilate what you have heard, what you have read about. Then stabilize it. The moment you stabilize it, you can understand better. That's why it's like you can assimilate it and stabilize your understanding. And this is how the second turning wisdom come about. So this second turning wisdom and first turning, unless you have your past cultivation, it may not be penetrative. Because this one are still contemplative wisdom, born of second turning. Then first turning, of course, it's born of hearing, reading, and listening. But when you go to the third turning, this is where the meditation comes in. So the Buddha said, this type of wisdom is called Bhavana Maya Panya. So Bhavana is the meditative training. When you put it into cultivation, this meditative wisdom born of bhavana, which is the meditative discipline or the meditative cultivation, this one always lead to awakening. And this is very penetrative. That's why under the third turning, if you were to read through the first sermon, Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, the Buddha repeated it for all the four truths. It all points toward enlightenment. Take for example the first noble truth of suffering or dukkha. He said this noble truth of suffering or dukkha has already been understood. Means you already have the understanding of what this truth is. That's why you must have awakened to it. Because you must have understood what dukkha is, the cause of its arising. Then you must have realized the cessation and the path that lead to the cessation or awakening or enlightenment, which is the Noble Eightfold Path. You must have cultivated it. That's why it has been understood. Then third turning of the second noble truth, the cause of suffering is self-delusion. Self-delusion, that condition, craving, grasping, clinging. So this cause of suffering, which is craving, born of self-delusion, has already been abandoned. That's why it's all about enlightenment. Then the third noble truth is the same. The third noble truth is about Nibbana, realization of enlightenment, which is Nibbana. This third noble truth, they talk about the cessation of all suffering has already been realized. Means you have realized the enlightenment, the awakening. Then the fourth noble truth is the same. This noble eightfold path, which is the path that leads to the end of all suffering, has already been cultivated. So third turning always points towards enlightenment and is very penetrative. So that's the reason why under the teaching, the wisdom are divided into three levels. Yeah. There are three types of wisdom born of the three turning of the Four Noble Truths. And the Buddha himself stated it very clearly under the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta. Even he himself as a Bodhisattva in the early days of cultivation and training, he has to realize the Four Noble Truths in his three turning before he can proclaim to be the fully enlightened one, yeah, or the enlightened one. So what more living being? Even the Buddha himself at that time has to develop it this way. So this is what the teaching is all about. So phase two of Dhamma is Patipatti. You put the teaching into cultivation, into practice. Yeah. Then after that you will receive the fruit of it. Yeah. So the fruit of it is Pativeda. So this one is the third turning. Means the fruit. You will reap the fruit of your hard work. Means you get to live the noble life of an enlightened one. Eh? All these are in the Heart Sutta note. The fruit is also described as the ultimate reward for your hard work. So the reward body that the Sutta talk about is after you have perfected your cultivation, after the Bodhisattva has walked the full Bodhisattva way and finally realized the perfection of wisdom and all the 10 perfection parameters, you will receive the reward of that hard work. That's how the reward body comes about. Okay? So this is just for those who are still maybe quite new. And for those who have already been with us for some time, it's like a revision for you so that you understand how wisdom can be developed. So now we will move on to the commentary by Xuan Hua. We see what Xuan Hua commentaries are. Page 247. According to Master Xuan Hua, he said under the commentary, when you bring forth wisdom, not just 10,000 years, but 10,000 eons of delusion are wiped away. Do not regret the past or be anxious about the future. What am I going to do next, you ask? If you plant good causes, you reap good result. If you plant bad causes, you will reap bad result. So do good things, and good things will happen. Do bad things, and bad things will happen. Your thought should be appropriate or proper. Perfectly lucid and full of light, not deviant, selfish, and self-seeking, obstructive, or jealous. If you are not afraid that others will be better than you, it may be that you are a little better than they are. But if you fear that they will surpass you, then you are sorry, than they are or better than you. The good and evil nature within the self nature differ. But self nature is non-dual. The non-dual suchness self nature is the real thing. So Yuan Jia, is it correct? Yuan Jia, I don't know the Mandarin actual word there. Wrote in his Song of Enlightenment, ignorance and the real nature are just the Buddha nature. The illusionary empty body is just the Dhamma body. So this is the poem written by this Yuan Jia. So this is what Master Xuan Hua has put in as an example. Then he explained, in the original real nature, there is no good or evil. It is entirely perfect and wonderful in itself, far-reaching in its penetration and broad in understanding. One vicious thought, such as, what is this? Bohiruchi. Bohiruchi's desire to poison Bodhidharma. Oh, is it? Somebody want to poison him. Destroy 10,000 eons of good karma, whereas one good thought melts away evil karma as immense as the numbers of grains, sand grains in the Ganges River. One good thought can cause the realization of Buddhahood, and one bad thought is cause enough for going to hell. If you would like to know whether you are going to become Buddha or go to hell, take a look at what kind of thought you have. To arrive at Buddhahood directly, see it for yourself in every thought. Understand your own mind and see your own original nature. Do not lose the original thought, the true nature. So this is Xuan Hua's commentary. If you were to look at the commentary with understanding, then maybe you may not entirely agree with what he has said. Because there are many level of understanding to all these things. Let's turn back to page 247. You see here, the analogy that they give, when you bring forth wisdom, not just 10,000 years, but 10,000 eons of delusion are wiped away. How do you develop the understanding of this sentence? You have to inquire deep into it. You don't just accept because it's spoken by somebody. Master Xuan Hua. I think what he tried to explain is he was looking at the sutta. So the sutta said, what is the perfect full reward body of the Buddha? Just as one lamp can disperse the darkness of 1,000 years, one thought of wisdom can destroy 10,000 years of delusion. So because of that, Xuan Hua used this analogy and this example. But the clear understanding is not what they describe here. They are trying to explain to you. But the sutta is correct. The sutta says, what is the perfect full reward body of the Buddha? But the sutta used the word, just as one lamp can disperse the darkness of 1,000 years. One thought of wisdom can destroy 10,000 years of delusion. That's why the word is just as an analogy. But what you need to understand is, the moment you realize this perfection of Sammasambuddhahood, that awakening is very different. It is complete in its understanding. Means complete in its own understanding. Means perfection of both wisdom and virtue. Then this one is very powerful, very unique. That's why it can, just like one lamb, one, the word here is one lamb, the Sammasambuddha, can disperse the darkness of 1,000 years. Then one thought of wisdom that he thought can destroy 10,000 years of delusion. So this is just a rough analogy or example that is like use for literal understanding. Because just this one lamp can really bring about awakening over a long period. Then we move on to the other part. The sutta say, do not think of the past. It is gone and can never be recovered. So another way of putting it is, the past is already gone. No more reality. You can't change the past. Then instead, think always of the future. I think something is wrong here. Why think always of the future? You check the Mandarin one. What did it say there? What did the Mandarin one say? Is the English translation correct? I don't think so. And he said, instead, think always of the future. How can you think of the future? You cannot think of the future. Your thought has to arise within the moment. You read the Mandarin. Just read it out. Read out the whole sentence. The sutta. Use the mic. Miss Lee. You can manage to locate the section on the sutta now. I'll read the whole sutta. Yeah, read from the beginning. What is the perfect full reward body?
善知识. 知心归于自性，是归于真佛。
No. That part is over already. The refusion is over already. After the refuge. After that chapter. After that chapter, and then another three sutta, three section of the sutta away, three or four sutta away. The one in bold. Where is the one with the pulsar? Reward body. Is it pulsar? Reward body. You read from your notes. Yeah.
Sent from internet, is it? 什么叫做圆满报身呢?
Correct. This is the correct one.
譬如一盏一灯能除
correct.
譬如一灯能破除千年的黑暗
correct.
一智能灭除万年的愚痴
correct.
不要经常回想以前的事
correct.
已经过去的事不可复得
correct.
要常思量 以后的行为念念原名，自然能见到自心本性。
means the Mandarin is correct. 以后的只能，以后 is not future. 行为啦，要啦 means from now onward. Understand? Don't worry about the past and the future. More important is from now onward. I think correct. NB1 is the correct translation, which is very good. So the English translation is very dangerous. I think should be the same. You read Xuan Hon, the Mandarin.
和名圆满报身，必如一灯能除千年暗，一字能灭万年余。
Yeah, it's the same.
莫思向前，已过不可得，常思以后，念念原名。
常思以后 doesn't mean the future, understand?
But the English one, I think, is more accurate.
Yeah, more accurate. So this one, the translation is... No, just now, NB1 is correct. From now onward, understand? That one is correct. No, from now onward is more important. You have to be very clear. So you should say, instead, think always from now onward, not in the future, of the future. Instead, think always from now onward, not of the future. In every thought, perfect and clear, see your own original nature. That is more important. That's why the translation sometimes very dangerous. So I read again. Do not think of the past, for it is gone and can never be recovered. Instead, think always from now onward. What are you going to do? You have to be in every thought perfect and clear. Perfect and clear means you have the ability to see your own original nature, or true mind, or true nature. Although good and evil differ, the true nature or original nature is non-dual. So just like Huining, he mentioned, 本来无一物, originally there was nothing, where can the dust alight? So this duality, good and evil, they come from mental creation, mundane mind, mundane concept and idea. So it's nothing to do with the original nature or true nature, for there is nothing inside there. That's why they say non-duality. That non-duality nature is the real nature or true nature, undefiled by either good or evil. It is the perfect full reward body of the Buddha. Okay, so this one is now clear. So we can move on. Okay, turn to next page of the sutta. Yes. Yeah? But the English translation is wrong. The English translation is wrong. Because this English translation is, he said, instead think always of the future. Where got such thing on? From now onward, it's not always of the future. You use the mic. I can't hear you.
Chang Si Yi Ho, Ni Chang Chang Si Xiang, Chiang Lai Wu Zhen Ma Ban.
Ah, yeah, Chiang Lai.
Chiang Lai Ni Zhen Ma Ban. 你将来种善因就结善果，种恶因就结恶果。你做好事就有好的果报，
yeah,
做不好的事就有不好的果报。
Yeah,
所以说念念原名，
yeah.
你要有正念，
yeah.
要有原名光灿烂这种念。
Yeah, thank you. Correct. So the Mandarin is correct, but the English translation is not so accurate because they use, you see, when you translate word for word, because Mandarin word is very funny, like 后来你要怎样? Understand? Means in future what you are going to do, but not to go and think of the future, understand? Means from now onward, you must have this true awareness, clarity of mind, the silent mind, to have this perfect awareness or mindfulness, to be aware of each and every thought that arises perfectly, clearly. Then only you can see your true nature. So this is very important. Okay, you just take a note of the wrong English translation. So that part is good. And in every thought, perfect and clear, see your own original or true nature. Okay, we move on. Turn to the next page, 248. What are the 100,000 Mirites transformation body of the Buddha? If you are free of any thought of the 10,000 Dhammas, then your nature is basically like emptiness. But in one thought of calculation, transformation occurs. Evil thoughts are transformed into hell beings, and good thoughts into heavenly beings. Viciousness is transformed into dragons and snakes, and compassion into bodhisattva. Wisdom is transformed into the upper realm, and delusion into the lower realm. The transformation of the self nature are extremely many, and yet the confused person, unawakened to that truth, continuously gives rise to evil and walk evil path. Turn a single thought back to goodness and wisdom is produced. That is a transformation body of the Buddha within your self nature. So this is the Suttapada. We go to the commentary. Having discussed the perfect full reward body which lacks nothing and has nothing in excess, which obtains nothing and loses nothing and is neither defiled nor immaculate, increase or decrease, male or female, good nor evil, but which is perfect bodhi that returns to non-attainment. The six patriarchs ask, what are the 100,000 Mirites transformation body? We have one body, you said. How can we have 100,000 Mirite body? What do the Buddha's transformation body have to do with me? This transformation body are simply 100,000 Mirite thoughts and calculations. Sakyamuni Buddha can transform himself to appear in any one of the 10 Dhamma realms. That is, he can become a Buddha, a Bodhisattva, a particular Buddha, an Arahant, a god, asura, human, hell being, hungry ghost, or animal. You might also say that you and I have 100,000 Mirite transformation body. I have taken 100,000 Mirite disciples, and all of them imitate their teacher in cultivation. They see their teacher eating only one meal a day before noon and say, I'm going to do that too. I tell them, I never stick out my head and back. I don't depend on external situation, and neither should you. If no one makes offering to me and I die, that's just fine. Those who live the home life under me must follow my three conditions as I do. So here he is talking about those who ordain under him. Freezing, I don't beg. Starving, I don't scheme. And dying of poverty, I ask for nothing. So this is something they have to when they aim, the discipline say, all right, even if we start to death, we won't back or skim. Because they copy me, they are my transformation bodies. In future, you will have transformation body too. You have a good way of doing things. You will have 100,000 mind like good transformation body. You have an evil, ghostly way. You will have that many ghostly transformation body. You are free of any thought of the 10,000 dhammas. Then your nature is basically like emptiness. One thought not produced, the entire substance manifests. You do not give rise to a single thought, your original Buddha nature appear. But are you producing a thought? Are you without false thinking? Are you not thinking? What will I eat tomorrow? What time will I get to bed tonight? Or I am thirsty, I think I will have a cup of tea. Without false thinking, you are a Buddha. But if you can't cut off your false thinking, you must not claim to be a Buddha. You must cultivate the way. If you haven't cultivated and say, hey, I'm a Buddha, you are just a dog of a Buddha. You can't simply say that everyone is Buddha. You have to cultivate and realize Buddhahood. Without cultivation, people are just people, animals are just animals, and dog are just dog. But do not be offended. Dogs also have Buddha nature. They have to cultivate, that's all. Six roots suddenly move, a covering of cloud. So this is a continuation of the poem. When you see something and think it beautiful, or hear something and think music, you are being influenced by the external. Using the six sense organ, the six sense object, and the six consciousness in this way, you cover yourself with cloud. So this is talking about the sense door consciousness. This sense door consciousness are dependent originating, condition arising. They are not real. So when you cling, grasp, and give meaning to them, your nature is being clouded by all this phenomenal world. That's why when you cultivate, you have to understand all this. But because you have a form and mind, you have the senses, the five physical senses and the mind. So these six senses are actively arising and passing away all the time. You only need to understand that they are not you. They are dependent originating, condition arising. And they arise because of the five aggregate of form and mind. So that is the wisdom, the understanding to break all this delusion, self-delusion. Otherwise, when you cultivate without understanding, you will use the wrong instrument, which is the thought, the mundane mind. And the thought and the mundane mind can only create consciousness through the six senses law. That's why the poem say, six roots suddenly move, means your senses become active. Then sense law consciousness arise, and you deludedly grasp and cling and keep meaning where you cannot see them clearly. You don't have the wisdom to awaken to their characteristic, their universal characteristics of impermanent leading to suffering, empty, and non-self nature. So that is the one that will cause self-delusion. There's a covering of cloud, like completely covered your self nature or your true nature. So you lose sight of your true nature, your true mind. And without your true mind, you cannot cultivate. So this is what cultivation is all about. When you see something and think it's beautiful, or hear something and think music, you are being influenced. Oh, this one we have covered. Okay, the next paragraph. Evil thoughts are transformed into hell being. Suppose you think, how can I get famous? How can I succeed? I will start a riot, murder people, set fire and loot the street. And good thoughts into heavenly beings. Oh, you say, I want to help people. You have no money. Here is $1,000,000 to help you get by. Or you think, no one makes offering to the Americans who have left home. I'm making an offering. Don't wait for America, such an affluent nation, to allow its new Buddhist Sangha to starve to death. Transform into the heavens. Wisdom is transformed into the upper realm and delusion into the lower realm. With intelligence, you go up. But if you are deluded, you fall. So the word intelligent is not an appropriate word. Huh? It's not intelligent with wisdom. Huh? Yeah. Then the superior one mounts on high. The petty person travels a lower road. The transformation of the self nature are extremely many, and yet the confused people unawakened to that truth continuously give rise to evil and walk the evil path. So that is from the sutta. Huh? Then Shenhua explained, the confused person's every thought is evil. That person mistreat me. I am going to ruin him. The great master Sun Xiu was the one who walked evil path by repeatedly sending higher killer after the six patriarchs. Turn a single thought back to goodness and wisdom is produced. That is the transformation body of the Buddha within your self nature. Do you understand? If you do, you are a good knowing advisor. If you don't, you are an evil knowing advisor. Wouldn't you rather be a good knowing advisor? So this is the commentary from Xuanhua. But essentially, what the sutta is trying to tell you is your self-nature is already that original nature, true nature, perfect in its own way. That's why there is no duality, nothing. But the mundane mind that comes with the form of mind into this samsaric world, and that is the one you have to take care of. Because that one has its own nature. That one can create my right transformation body. If you are not careful, if you are heedless, if you are not mindful, if you have not developed the understanding, through delusion, through ignorance, you will create wrong thought, or what they call evil thought. So this wrong thought or evil thought, they will condition evil becoming in future. That's why they will become your transformation body. If you don't understand this principle, which comes from the right view with regards to law of karma, that's why all this you have to relate back to the law of karma. But in the sutta, they didn't go back to all those things. They just talk about good and evil. That's why it's not easy for cultivator to understand. If you understand the source of suffering come from delusion, and delusion comes from ignorance, so you have to straighten your view. You have to go back to the original teaching as taught by the Buddha. That's why he taught the three right view. Right view regards to the law of karma. And the explanation by the Buddha, Sakyamuni, is very important. Under the teaching, he constantly reminded the monks to contemplate the five daily contemplation. And within the five daily contemplation, the last one, the fifth contemplation, is about this law of karma. That's why he said every day you have to reflect and contemplate. And this one come under the second turning, wisdom. You can reflect, contemplate, following the second turning. You will understand this teaching. That's why under the fifth contemplation of the five daily contemplation, the Buddha said, each and every living being, we are all born of our karma, heir to our karma, conditioned and supported by our karma. And we are what we are because of our karma. So if you have reflected, contemplate, what will you do? Yeah? What will you do? Huh? What will you do? That fifth contemplation. Huh? You will know how to take care of karma. Why? Because karma plays such a great role in your life. And the Buddha said, not only you, no, each and every one of us, no, we are all born of our karma, heir to our karma, conditioned and supported by our, and we are what we are because of karma. So your entire existence depends on karma. If you understand this truth, you must be serious about it and take care of karma. Because we are born of it, we inherit everything. And this law of karma, our karmic nature, yeah, they will condition us and support us every now and then when we arise. And we are what we are because of that law of karma. So 100% of your mundane life depend on karma. And I use 99.99% is the other 0.000% is for those who already awakened, not mundane. That's why within the mundane condition world, those without wisdom, 100% of your life condition depend on karma. Because you are born of it, heir to it, conditioned and supported by it. Then you are what you are because of it, each and every moment. So this is the most powerful right view that you need to understand. And when you understand this, you will take care of karma. Because when you take care of karma, you become beautiful. Because you are born of it. That's why the mind right transformation body comes from this understanding. If you develop the right thought, then you will be born into this world, into wholesome rhyme, into beautiful rhymes. But if you arise a lot of this evil thought, in future, after you're passing away from that segmented life, it will create karmic conditioning for rebirth consciousness to arise. And evil thought will condition evil rhyme of existence. That's why the mind right transformation body comes about through karma. So if you don't take care of karma, if you don't intend to train your mind to be heedful, to be aware, to develop all the right thought, right speech, right action, then in future, when karmic fruition come about, the mind right transformation body that you are going to take to rebirth consciousness in future, they will all go the evil way. So this right view, this understanding will develop and transform your understanding. Then you will know how to cultivate. Then you will know how to reflect upon the teaching. No wonder the Buddha's advice is such. He said, all evil has to be avoided. We have to cultivate goodness, wholesomeness. Then we have to purify our mind. Otherwise, we suffer. We become afflicted. This comes from right view with regards to law of karma. To take care of karma is to follow his advice. And this is how the teaching come about. And this is how you cultivate. So, under Pariyatti, phase 2 of the Dhamma, you have to cultivate with that understanding. That's why when you put the teaching into practice, you must develop those right view. That's why Noble Eightfold Path start with right view. Then you must understand how you function as a human being. The dependent origination, paticca samuppada. That third right view is Dhamma Niyama, right view with regards to the Four Noble Truths. and all the other essential Dhamma. The essential Dhamma are spin off from the Four Noble Truths. So when you understand what suffering is and the cause of its arising, you will know how to attend to it. Then you will know how to endure and severe it. Then after that, when you realize cessation, means you will come to understand suffering need not be, for enlightenment in the here and now is possible. That's why with that understanding, when you come to this world, to another transformation body or form of mind, segmented life, you will become beautiful. Then when you understand that the Fourth Noble Truth is very clear about the meditation, means this Noble Eightfold Path, if you cultivate it, it will lead to the end of all suffering, the enlightenment in the here and now. So, this is the meditation. That's why you have to train your mind to be ever mindful, to cultivate Noble Eightfold Path. And your cultivation will become beautiful. And you will come to the complete understanding and realization of this teaching. And this is how Patipatti, face toward the Dhamma, can be cultivated. And when you cultivate according to the understanding as taught by the Buddha, then you will receive the fruit. Third phase of Dhamma, Pativeda, the fruit of your hard work. You will come to have the condition to live the noble life of an enlightened being. And that can come about when your former mind has developed that wisdom, the understanding. So when the awakening arises, the wisdom connected to the former mind, this former mind no longer deluded. That's why it can live life to the fullest. Life becomes meaningful, wonderful. Then you can get to experience all of the wonders and beauties of life, born of all this understanding and cultivation. So that is the deeper meaning behind. Otherwise, you just read the Platform Sutta, they will not explain to you the underlying cultivation behind, because they assume you already understood good and evil and all those things. That's the reason why I had this sharing earlier on. I used to tell you Mahayana and Theravada, there are pros and cons. There are pros and cons. Some they don't understand. They thought Mahayana, higher teaching, what they call Maha, the greater vehicle or larger vehicle. Then they look down upon Theravada. And Theravada very unhappy because they were given the name Hinayana, smaller vehicle. But the true teaching got none of this. Who created Theravada or Hinayana, and who created Mahayana, is the human mind over the evolution of civilization and the Buddhist teaching. And because of what happened, you look back, now you start to understand how it creates such division, and how such division end up having problem both sides. So Theravada has its problem, but Theravada has its good point, because all the very, very authentic teaching, they are actually transmitted through the Theravada oral chanting. Yet a lot of the oral chanting, they are still very authentic, very accurate, especially Pali chanting. So you need that. Then the basic essential teaching, they are actually covered very detailed in the Theravada teaching, Theravada tradition. But as it evolved into the Mahayana teaching, what happened is Mahayana teaching, the emphasis is on the higher teaching. So what happened to the Theravada teaching? where they thought is the smaller vehicle, they are not interested. It's just like our Buddhist community, yeah? All of the Sunday school, huh, you go, they teach the kindergarten student for number two. So when you join their adult class, or they say, no need to study for number two, well, these are for kindergarten. So they straight away go to the more adult teaching, and they are more interested in Vipassana. They are more interested in Abhidhamma, Jhana, Jnana, and all those things. And because of that, they lose sight on the essential teaching, which is the basis, the foundation of the Buddha's actual teaching. So the pro of Theravada is all of the essential teaching, the basic teaching, they are very complete inside there. But the understanding of it somehow is already affected. Not like before. And they are very conservative. That's why they call it the orthodox teaching. They call it the teaching of the elders, the Theras. And this Theravada tradition, they are very strict. Anything they not sure, they take it out. They take it out. Until they become so restrictive and so rigid that Theravada find it very difficult to compete with the world. That's why many years after the Buddha's passing away, it was mentioned by our late Chief Reverend K. Sridhamananda, I remember he said, he himself said, he was very grateful that Mahayana came, he said, because Buddhism was almost kicked out of India, completely wiped off. During those period when they go for debate, or they couldn't reply, they couldn't stand up to the debate and all things. So Hinduism assimilated a lot of the Buddhist teaching, then evolved their own, then kicked Buddhism out of India. But luckily the Mahayana came back, then the teaching comes back. So what is important is you have to compare the two, then take the best out of both. Then you will develop the complete understanding of the essential teaching as taught by all the Buddhas of the three period of time. So Theravada retained a very good tradition, which is the essential Dhamma. But when you go on to the Mahayana teaching, you realize these essential teaching are not taught or seldom taught. Even if they are taught, it's mentioned only within that limited capacity. They didn't have the full of the Theravada Sutta, like the Satipatthana Sutta, that whole thing is seldom mentioned or taught in the Mahayana tradition. Whereas the Mahayana tradition, they are more interested in the higher teaching, the Bodhisattva way, which is very beautiful, very good. So these two teaching, you combine them, that's why you must start from Theravada. Then you have an open mind, you move on to Mahayana. Then you will come to a realization that they are actually the same teaching carried over long period of cultivation with different understanding. Then the full cultivation leading to Sambuddhahood comes about. And that is what the whole teaching is all about. In fact, Sakyamuni Buddha also mentioned in the Theravada teaching, he also completed the 10 perfections to become Sammasambuddha. But the missing teaching is how he developed that perfection. It was not really shared in the teaching. It was not mentioned or taught. Then all this teaching comes about many, many years later, a few hundred years later. That's how when Mahayana arise, the great beings, the Bodhisattva, the Maha bodhisattvas and all these great beings, including other Buddhas, they started to re-establish all this higher teaching. And that's how today we have this teaching. And this is what, as cultivator, we need to understand. We don't end up taking side or argue whether Theravada or Mahayana is still part of the Buddha's teaching. It's only humanity, the human mind, that segregate and divide. Ah, yeah, Amy. Pass the mic to Amy. Yeah.
Yes. I think the true Buddha's teaching is lasted only for hello. The full Buddha Dharma, pure full Buddha Dharma, lasted for only 500 years after Sakyamuni passed away.
Yes.
Then after 500 years of his parinibbana, there's the time where Mahayana teaching coming in, right?
Yes.
So that's why it's no more considered pure Buddha Dharma after 500 years.
Yes.
So in a way, Mahayana's influence the purity of Buddha Dharma.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That is how you try to present it. If you really understand that Mahayana teaching, it is not what you try to maybe explain just now. Because it was stated in the Mahayana teaching. I think it's in our Diamond Sutta we went through. Under the Diamond Sutta, it was mentioned. The Buddha predicted, he said, the first 500 years, the teaching will be beautiful, very authentic. Very authentic, still a lot of enlightened being. But after the first 500 years, it will start to have problem. Because the teaching will become like affected. Because people are more interested in energy field, in concentration and all those things. So this will influence the cultivator. So it was mentioned in the Diamond Sutta, the second 500 years was mainly on energy field. Then the next 500 years that come, if I'm not wrong, is about Sutta and Vinaya. We have the Theravada always say it because there is also is also mentioned in the Parinibbana Sutta before the Buddha passed away. Ananda forgot to ask him, remember? He was in grief. He wanted the Buddha to extend his life. But the Buddha said, no. This body is like a worn-out blocker. It's already too weak. And it is going to break down anytime. So because of that, Ananda was very, very sad. Then he came out. He was in deep grief. He don't know what to do. Then luckily, the other venerable Anuruddha saw him, talked to him. He said, no, this is not the time to grieve. You must ask the Buddha a few very important questions, pertinent questions. After your passing away, who shall we follow? Yeah. And many other relevant related questions. So it was mentioned in the Theravada Sutta, he said, because he didn't appoint anybody to take over from him. He just told Ananda after his parinibbana, keep the sutta and the vinaya as your teacher. Yeah. Then he told Ananda, the major rules of the vinaya cannot be violated, but the minor rules that he established later on, this one, you can use your own discretion to do away with it, if the condition allow and appropriate. So according to Sakyamuni under the Diamond Sutta, he said, the third 500 years will be the year where they will argue about Sutta and Vinaya. then the next 500 years worse. He said, it will go into method and technique and all those things. That is what we are seeing until today. Yeah. And that's how the fall of the teaching comes about. Yeah. And this teaching gets affected over the years is because as the teaching gets transmitted over the continents, many things changes. Then as the writing come about, the translation come about, many things changes. And the worst thing to happen is as this original good disciple and cultivator, yeah? Because at that time there are also lay people who are very good, yeah? Like Chitta and other things. As this cultivator over the years, they couldn't pass their understanding down. Then those who learn from them, they are not as good. Then the interpretation of it, the many of this wrong commentary or explanation lead to further downfall, further decay in all this. But in between, somehow, there are some very good teachers or master who came, like Hui Ning, Bodhidharma. Even Bodhidharma, when he went over to China, he still have a lot of problem because at that time people cannot understand this teaching. He was way ahead of time. Then the emperor also couldn't understand him. That's why finally he faced the war 9 years and other things. But it was predicted there will be a sixth patriarch who will bring forth the teaching to another level. And it will bring about the causes and conditions for the Dhamma to flourish again. But then, like any of this teaching, after it flourish over the years, it will go down again. Until finally, when it reach Xu Yun, Lao He Sang. Yeah. You see, when Xu Yun arise, he actually bring forth the Mahayana teaching to another level again. And he created a lot of good disciple, great disciple that we are able to benefit from. And also help establish what we have today. Yeah? A few of these Buddhists, we call it Buddhist institution, yeah? Or groupings that play their vital role in our civilization, like I have mentioned earlier on. Yeah? You have Ciji, Fo Kuang, Fa Gu San, and also this Zhong Tai Chan Si, and a few more. Yeah? They are developing themselves into an organization which is starting to become more and more global. And these are the fruition of what happened during the era of Xu Yun and Sixth Patriarch. But for the Theravada, I don't know, until today I didn't see that many. Of course there are many good monks in Thailand and all over. I think one of them that maybe has some great influence on the Western disciple is Achan Cha. Then of course you can talk about in Thailand, it was because of Achan Man, Long Po Man. Then because of that, a lot of other great monks also came. But their influence and their impact is not as strong and as powerful as the Mahayana tradition. The Mahayana tradition, when Hui Ning came, it brought the teaching to another very, very exceptional level. Then, of course, Xu Yun, he has his own nature. His main purpose is to rebuild temple and establish the Buddhist cultivator. That's why he got a lot of students. He got a lot of students, but he lived very long. He lived until the age of 120, and he has a lot of very exceptional parami and other things. So coming back to Angbi's question, the first 500 years was beautiful. Then when Mahayana come in, somehow the thing went down. So in that aspect, I already explained, it's not to say it went down. Even without the Mahayana, it's going to go down. If without the Mahayana, it would have gone straight down to the drain at that time and never come out again. Because at that time, Chief Reverend did say, without Mahayana, Buddhism will be dead at that time. But because the Sasana is supposed to last for 4,500 years, that's why before it go down completely to the drain, somehow it will turn around. So Mahayana, we should, to be fair, in every aspect of it, we should give credit to how Mahayana actually saved Theravada. Then how, after that, Mahayana actually flourished because of Huineng. And because of Huineng's teaching, they were able to defend and won the debate and develop a lot of understanding. That's how Abhidhamma was added to the Theravada teaching later on.
That is really true that Mahayana has been to be given credit. In a way, Mahayana also created confusion, like they take vegetarian food, which Buddha already shunned Devadatta from becoming vegetarian. And then Mahayana Sangha also, they can eat dinner. Buddha said after chow we should fully practice instead of cooking and eating dinner. So the confusion come in that affects the purity of the Buddha Dhamma.
Could be. In that sense, I agree. In that sense. But you must understand, the Buddha didn't stop Devadatta from entering, from taking vegetarian. He never. He only disagreed with Devadatta when he tried to impose vegetarian as a monk's precept. He is against that. He said, you want to become vegetarian? No problem. You can set up your sect. But never introduce vegetarian as a precept for the monks. That was what Sakyamuni was against. Because at that time, Devadatta got different intention. His intention is he knew the Buddha will not allow that, but he purposely wants to prove to the disciple that, see, he is not as pure as what you think, because he does not favor complete vegetarian. And to Devadatta is, you go complete vegetarian, you are more compassionate. I already explained, compassion is from your heart, not what you do physically, outwardly, to impress people. But the second part that you mentioned is in a way true, because under the monk's rule, after 12, you're not supposed to take solid food, understand? You can take liquid food. But Mahayana got its reason, understand, why it has to amend that rules. To them, is one of the minor rules that they can amend. Because in China, at that time, when Buddhism came over, even during Shen Huo's time, it was so tough, very, very tough, because of the harsh weather, the condition, and all those things. So during the early days, when Mahayana came over, if you want to follow that tradition of arms round, they will not have support, because Buddhism was not established in China at that time. Then because of the harsh weather and the condition, they were forced to grow their own food. That adjustment came. That's why all the Mahayana temple, they plant their own food. They do their own things. They try to establish their own need and other things. Then the temple is also a place, every time got war or problem, people will go there for like a refuge or whatever. Yeah. Then later on, of course, even after Bodhidharma, that place they call Shaolin寺. Martial art become more popular than Dharma study. So that was also part of the cause and erosion. Then when they start to establish this, it was not explained. That's why people make use of it. You can say it become abuse. Means now the Mahayana teaching say you can take food, even dinner. Then some of the Mahayana, they are still very strict. Like Shenhua still observe what the Buddha observed. After 12, no food. Like go vegetarian. Then they impose more stringent. I was told he himself imposed. He never lie down or no. He always in the sitting posture. I don't know how long he took the vow for. Then some of his students, I think, also follow him. They never lie down to sleep. I was told many of Shenhua's disciples, they follow that teacher's example and tradition. Because to them, it's perseverance, determination to cultivate. So each and every one of these teacher or master, they come, they have their reason. But cultivation is about your inner nature, your sincere intention. Is at the mind level. Whatever that you experience in the world, there is always duality. And like I always say, there are always black sheep in every profession. Maybe the Buddhist community or the Sangha or what. But it's the individual that are sincere that will progress and benefit from all this. If you are not sincere, you can never benefit. You will justify and do other things. So whether it contributes to downfall or don't contribute to downfall, to me, this is not important. But this is the thought that creates the duality. Then it will divide and come up with a lot of this issue. The main understanding is, as a cultivator, given all this that we see in the world, are we going to be part of the division and get ourselves entangled and involved? That is the question you should ask yourself. For me, it's very simple. If I am sincere and true to what I understand and commit myself, I will know what to do, whether got rules or no rules. This nature will know how to move. Then whether Theravada right or Mahayana right is not important to me. It's just a convention. If you take side, your mundane mind take over. But if you understand, whatever that can help you, use it. Like the Buddha said, whatever that doesn't help you leads to negativity, forget about it. So this is how you will be able to develop the understanding to transcend all this. Just like Krishnamurti said, for the world to change, what must happen? The individual must change. If there is no change in the individual, the world will never change. Why? Because the summation of all of you is the world consciousness. If the individual does not change, the world will not change. So the individual is more important than trying to use the thought to argue about right and wrong. Understand? If you are true to yourself, sincere, If you have this understanding, you will change, transform. Then you can touch others. Then from there, it can continue to influence the rest. But if the individual does not change, then it will be a complete collapse of the whole system. But each and every one is trying to outdo the other one. You try to be more Theravada than that so-called colleague of yours. Then when you see a Mahayana, you already divide yourself. And as a Theravada, you can never agree with Mahayana. That's how conflict arises. That's how argument arises. Then you blame each other. And the mark of a self is so strong. And the delusion is so strong. That's why all this will bring about further decadence of the Buddha Dhamma. What we need is cultivator who have the understanding to move on. Then when the individual transform, that's why you plant the seed of Bodhi. Then when this seed of Bodhi mature, then it can touch many, like the Sutta says. If you develop the ability to perfect yourself, your one lamp can be a light to 1,000 years of darkness. And every single thought of wisdom that you impart through your nature can light up or do away with the delusion of 1,000 eons. So this is what the Sutta is trying to tell you. Forget about the society's argument and division. Focus on your own understanding, cultivation, training. When you perfect yourself, when you have the ability to share, then your lamp will be a different lamp. And this lamp can light up many, many lamps. And many, many of these lamps can also light up the innumerable mind-right lamps. That's why it can cut away delusion of 1,000 years, 1,000 eons of ignorance or darkness. And the power of wisdom, perfection of that self-nature, realizing that Buddha nature is a very, very powerful cultivation. Even though it's very difficult, it takes a long time, but many Buddhas has fulfilled their perfection, fulfilled their vows, and they have realized Sammasambuddhahood. Buddhahood. So it's possible. But those who walk that way, they will know ultimately there is no mark of a self doing it. There is no mark of living being. There is no mark of any phenomenal world. And all this, that form and mind that come and develop the cultivation, the perfection, towards the end of the cultivation, it has that understanding. That's why it just do the work. And it's unending. Because world system are immeasurable. Very, very extensive. And there is no way you can clear all the delusion of these mind-right living beings. There are many, many world systems too. Even universe. So a lot of these things is not from your thought process, not from memory, not from knowledge. You cannot understand all this. You can only come to the understanding when you yourself have developed the cultivation towards the very far end. And then all this understanding will be there. Then from there, your understanding will transform your cultivation. And the way your nature comes, the way your form and mind come, will become very different. So for the time being, focus on the cultivation. Go back to that understanding that the self nature need to be nurtured, need to be cultivated. Then from there, when it has the condition to awaken, it will become very powerful. Then during that time, a lot of things can happen. You know? That's how all the Buddhas, Sammasambuddha, they are able to do their part. They are able to create a lot of this possibility. You know? Especially Amitabha Buddha. He has developed a lot of Pure Land, countless. You know? Okay? Yeah.
Yeah. In a way, yeah. Maybe like what Parati always say, it means the if there's no Mahayana coming out, maybe there's no this the nuns lineage
Theravada
nuns can
ordinated
from the China Mahayana tradition again. So it means to be for 5,000 Buddha Dharma become 4,500. It's also meant to be, maybe.
Yes, so meant to be. That's why the Buddha knew the sasana will be shortened by 500 years. Yeah. Instead of 5,000, it will last for 4,005. So like you said, if it's without the Mahayana, based on Theravada tradition, you are not supposed to have any more bhikkhuni order. Because there is not enough nun who has the precepts to ordain. You need minimum 5. You know? They reach a stage where they can't even find 5. You know? That's why it was so bad. You know? 5 bhikkhuni to ordain. That's No. Huh? Bhikkhuni 2 only. Yeah? You mean 2 also cannot find at that time?
Go through ordination. First is by the bhikkhuni, then second by another 5 bhikkhus. The nun has to go through 2 ordinations.
Oh, 2 ordinations.
Yeah, very tough.
Oh, no wonder it's so difficult to establish. But then how did the monks make a decision that there is no more bhikkhuni order? Yeah, means what? Not enough bhikkhuni to ordain or what? So all the while I thought there is not enough 5 bhikkhuni to form the order to ordain bhikkhuni. I didn't know that they have to go through a second ordination to be ordained by the monk. Oh, by the monks. 5 bhikkhus. Oh, to be like certified as a true. The higher ordination. Oh, okay. So the second one is the higher ordination. Oh, okay. But at least, if the first one you can go in, means you can become a bhikkhuni. Means according to the Buddha's tradition. But to me, this is my personal, I don't want to get into argument. It's about the individual, understand? If your heart is a bhikkhuni, you are a bhikkhuni, understand? It's not what you wear that make you a monk or a bhikkhuni. Like my teacher Achayantra said, if the monk make you a rope, if the rope make you a monk, then you put the rope on the tree, the monk also become a tree. It's not what you wear, it's your heart. If your heart has the understanding, has the cultivation, you are a samana. You know what is a samana? A true spiritual practitioner, a virtuous being, worthy of all the things that the enlightened being is worthy of. That's why your heart is very important. To me, it's an individual mission, understanding. It's not what society see in you. That's why a lot of these things, when you understand, you will develop the cultivation differently. But this type of understanding is very difficult to establish for ordinary cultivator or practitioner. Do you know why or not? Because the ordinary practitioner, because of your delusion, your greed, your evil roots are still there. And if you are given a choice not to wear the robe, to become a monk or a nun. And for you to determine to live like a monk and a nun, you cannot, understand not? Because you will tend to fall. Because there is lack of understanding. Lack of understanding means you don't have the understanding, that's why you cannot maintain that cultivation. That cultivation can only be maintained if you are serious about life and you already have your past cultivation, you already knew this is important, then you will go all out and cultivate and you will become different. That's why this life, when my nature come, my nature new is different. And it can go all out and do this. And it can understand. That's why at that time, when I developed the cultivation, nobody can even understand how I did it. I did it in the midst of life. I did the daily mindfulness, everything. And I was married. And I developed the cultivation full time, throughout the day. If you are not serious and you don't have that type of understanding and that type of nature, you can never go that way, because your thought will come and tell you a lot of things. Ayo, you forget about it lah. You ain't got time. You got your family to look after, your parents, your brother, your sister. There is so much thing to do. You want to go and waste your time on it. So that mundane mind, that heedless thinking mind, without understanding, without wisdom, without your past cultivation, your karmic nature support, and your spiritual nature's special cultivation and perfection, this form of mind, when it comes, it don't have that ability, that capacity to do it. So there is a reason why the Buddha said all these things, because for those who are serious, if you follow his Vinaya and you really keep to his Vinaya and cultivate sincerely, you can become enlightened, and it's much easier, because all his Vinaya rule is to develop mindfulness, understanding, heedfulness. And everything that you follow under the Vinaya, the 227, you will be very mindful and you will have a lot of understanding, and you live in accordance to what he has taught you, your mind is different, and you will progress very fast. So there is a reason why he introduced that lineage, because his lineage was that way. But that is not the only lineage that you have to follow the tradition. Those who attend the Tuesday class, they will understand. Remember Tuesday class? Hui Rong asked one question. Is Sakyamuni Buddha have not left the palace when he came to realize the wife was already has already given birth to Rahula? Can he still become enlightened and become the Samasana? I said yes, he can. But because he has this tradition to follow. His tradition was, his lineage was this way. That's why he must renounce the world. He must go this way. There is no other way. But he can, if he choose another lineage, which is not to establish the Sangha order and all those things. But because this is in his vow, this was what he has chosen and decided. That's why it has to go this way. He has to make that decision to renounce the world and to go forth to search for this truth, this teaching and all those things. Okay.
Radio, one more question, one more doubt actually.
Okay.
Just now Radio said, those who see the Dhamma see the Buddha. That's why when Ananda asked him, he said there's no successor. Right? But this patriarchship lineage, so-called we found it in YouTube that the Buddha hold a flower and then just smile, and then Kassapa, Mahakassapa was smiling, so called receive the mind-to-mind seal.
Transmission.
How he became the first patriarch after Buddha passed away, but there was nothing mentioned in Theravada.
It's not in the teaching.
Two different things, right? One is you see the Dhamma, you see the Buddha.
Yes.
There's no successor. But there's first patriarch until 28 patriarch, Bodhidharma to China, and there's number 6 patriarch of China, number 33. 33 of the Buddha's patriarchship lineage. So maybe I need Brother Teo to clarify this doubt of mine many years already.
Okay, very good. Thank you for the good question. You see, a lot of this thing comes about because of human nature, human perception. So the Theravada under their sutta already make it very clear. After the Buddha's passing away, which was recorded in the Parinibbana Sutta, the Buddha did specifically to Ananda, keep to the Vinaya and the sutta. This will be your teacher. That's why he didn't appoint anybody. Do you know why? Because he already knew at that time, when he was still alive. You know what happened or not? A lot of his chief disciple or close disciple, they were having their own student, and they were arguing among themselves. Devadatta got his gang, understand? And Ananda got his so-called followers. Then, of course, Sariputta and Moggallana, they passed away before the Buddha passed away. Then you got Anuruddha and all of this. And all this, it's just like what happened to Mahayana. After Xuyin passed away, you know how many of the students claim to have received the patriarchship from him? Because they want the lineage to continue. Understand? No. The part and the rope don't continue. He didn't say the patriarchship don't continue. The patriarchship continue. It's only the butt and the rope don't continue. It's not necessary. The fifth patriarch said it was transmitted to him to tell meaning. After that, you don't need the butt. Do away with the butt and the rope. So what happened is the Buddha knew if every one of them also want to claim, then who shall he appoint? Do you understand? Whoever you appoint will create more division, more infighting. It's just like in Chinese history, the king. Whoever who is appointed as the, they call what? The one that take over, you call Taizi. I tell you, that will be the target of assassination. Understand? A lot of people want to assassinate him. So whoever he appoint, he will get into trouble. Understand? So the best way, if I were the Buddha, is the same. The Vinaya and the Sutta. But this is the key to his teaching. The discourse and the discipline. If you don't keep the discipline, sila, then only samadhi come in. Then the whole sangha will go wild. That's why it is meant to be. He could have easily appointed Mahakasapa because he is the most senior. And as far as the Mahayana teaching is concerned, the patriarchship and all those things, you see, to Sakyamuni Buddha is very simple. Whoever who has the ability to receive this teaching, that nature will know. It will just mind to mind seal, like in the March retreat. You remember? I explained for the first time after so many years of retreat. Their condition were there. People want to know what is this mind to mind seal or transmission without word. You have to have that cultivation from the past to have that understanding. Otherwise, you cannot. That's why I explained there very clearly how it can be done. It's just like Hui Ning, being an illiterate, when he come, how can he just listen to one stanza from the Diamond Sutta and He just awakened. This is what mind to mind seal is all about. He already has this cultivation from the past. This understanding is already in his nature. So for him to recall and inherit, he only needs condition. First, he needs to connect to the true mind. But he was born without the mundane mind. He was born with that true mind. That's why he is a very unique being. That's why the moment he hear, he don't even have to go and practice meditation or cultivate and connect the silent mind. He was already born without the mundane mind. That's why his mind is always the nature, the silent mind. That's why the moment the Diamond Sutta mentioned the mind must have no dwelling, he straight away came to great awakening, where his mind was all along never dwell. And he knew what that nature is because he don't have the mundane mind. That's why when he heard the poem by Sun Siu, he straight away knew Sun Siu haven't realized the true mind. That's why he is very different. Then when he heard the mind-to-mind transmission, where he was not allowed to be in the hall, the place where they teach and all those things. So after he wrote that poem to counter Sun Siu, then the fifth patriarch went to the kitchen and knocked 3 times and hinted to him to come that night. And when he went there, the fifth patriarch knew that he has the past. He just quickly, briefly go through the Diamond Sutta. But when he reached the point where he said, you have to understand how to use this mind, which is the mundane mind, and yet not yet yourself entangled with it, straight away winning came to great awakening. And he straight away said, how beautiful this Dhamma is. How wonderful this Dhamma is. Because he only need that message. How to use the form of mind, the mundane mind. And yet, he already have the understanding. But he only needs somebody to brief him on this. That's why the mind-to-mind transmission is like that. Sometimes they just smile. It's understood. Because the level of cultivation is like that. That's why a lot of the teaching that this nature of mind develop this life and I receive it, it's not because my teacher understood and pass it to me, understand now, and teach it to me. Sometimes I just saw them move their hand, explaining to somebody else, this nature already understood, awakened to the three universal characteristics. How is it possible? They didn't even talk to me, you talk to the Singaporean guy. Because this nature has developed it from the past, and it was ready because it was ever mindful throughout the day. So that movement, that instant, it awakened to the three characteristics. Then when Ajahn Yantra spoke, used different language, nothing to do with the Dhamma, immediately connect, it linked. It understood. Then sometimes the teacher or the guy who taught me, they also still haven't penetrated those things. But they know these were beautiful things. And they just share it with me. Then the moment they share, this nature understands. Yeah. And a lot of this understanding, like I mentioned, I never learned this life. Nobody really taught me. Then how did this nature understand? It's because of this past cultivation, it has the ability to receive truth. Because the way it gives is like that. And the way it comes, it will receive truth the same way, sometimes from nature, sometimes from guides and teachers, or people whom I have never met, and suddenly I met. And sometimes through message from this great being, they just come. So this type of transmission, which Engby was trying to ask, how come there is a Surangama Sutta that mentioned about the mind-to-mind transmission? Because Sakyamuni Buddha hold out a flower, understand? Then within the assembly, Mahakasapa smiled, and it was transmitted according to the sutta. Just a smile. Yeah. So now I share, you smile. He is not going to work, because of that past cultivation, the condition, everything. Then that day, I also explained accord and flow at the Thursday class. If there is no condition for people to ask that type of question, I cannot explain, because you need condition for Dhamma to flow. And those who understand and have the condition to receive all this truth, they receive very fast. So what I try to explain and clear the doubt of Ingvi is this Mahayana teaching that continue on from Mahakasapa, the first patriarch after Sakyamuni Buddha, until Bodhidharma to the Mahayana tradition, it has to come out. And it has to come out during that time, what they call the Surangama Sutta that was transmitted. Because this is the beginning of the Mahayana tradition. And the Buddha knew. That's why I said, all this, I don't know whether I explained to you or not, Ingvi, why the Buddha came earlier. You remember? If he had come 2,000 over years later, under our present civilization, with all the technology, everything, you would have said, oh yeah, what a waste. If the Buddha come now, everything he teach, not only recorded, no, can keep for very long. We can video, we can animate, everything is recorded. Why did it happen 2,000 over years ahead, when civilization was still so backward? There was even no writing. Understand? If you were to use your mundane thinking, which is your thought process, you cannot understand. But their nature understand, because like I explained, he has to come during that time because of his prediction, his vow and all those things. And at that time, during his 2600 years ago, in India, there were a lot of wrong view. All of the teaching at that time were all energy field, thought based and all those things. That's why when he came with the understanding of mindfulness, the awareness, pointing towards the other mind, which is the true mind, the true nature and all those things. And all this teaching was not known before that. And because he came, the teaching comes about. Then later on, as societies evolve, the Buddha knew initially the essential teaching should be the handful of leaves, so that he teach the sainthood way. That's why under the Mahayana teaching, it did mention there were five phases of his teaching, period, they call it period, where the different level of teaching were taught. And this is according to Mahayana, because the Mahayana teaching, the higher teaching, were taught to all those beings who can carry this Mahayana teaching over. And some were taught to the devas after the mother passed away. Yeah. So all this teaching, they come about because of condition. So Sakyamuni knew he has to create the Sangha, that lineage, where he already make that decision to hold on to that lineage, to continue that lineage. Because that was his cultivation, his lineage. That was what he has decided. So for that Sangha community to come about, he has to have the sainthood monks to prepare themselves so that this teaching can be propagated, continue for a certain period before Mahayana come. It's just like Mahayana is like you go to university, understand? So during the time when he come, let's say he teach all the Mahayana teaching, then what happened? He like build a lot of university, but not enough Form 5 students to go in, understand? So it defeats the purpose. At that time, civilization was too backward. They cannot understand all this. And all these were not the things that living beings were looking for. Then those who have affinity with him, there are some, like I say, if his close disciple and those that have affinity with him, cannot go this way, the Bodhisattva way, to become Sammasambuddha Buddha, then who else can go? Definitely his close disciple knows the teaching. They also understand. But what he is more interested in teaching is the sainthood way. So that's why he established the Sangha, he taught the handful of leaf, and he just go ahead with the teaching. Then he transmit to Mahakasapa so that the Mahayana lineage will come about at the right time when the condition is appropriate. That's how it comes. Then you look at our society nowadays, the Western world, the education system, everything, and the way we evolve the last 30, 40 years. We progress scientifically, we progress materialistically, we progress so fast. Technology, everything progress so fast. That's why you got a high stress society compared to last time. And a lot of people will have gone into depression and all those things. That's why you need a lot of psychiatrists, a lot of doctors and all those things that are in this field. But luckily, because of his teaching that was taught 2,000 over years ago, this mindfulness teaching has become popular. Where they realize this mindfulness teaching can help. That's why a lot of people now use mindfulness to help all these people with mental problems. Those with depression problem and all those things. And do you know, mindfulness is a very powerful thing, very important thing. I forgot who already, one of our Kayanamita, I forgot who discussed with me the Dhamma. And he was the one that actually mentioned this. That's why I came to develop the what they call condition to share with you all today. I now recall Elsie's husband, Prasajai. Yeah, he used to fetch me to Thursday class nowadays. And you know, in his dialogue with me while we were traveling, even he came to my Tuesday class very often. He always expressed his gratitude and he thanked me for all those sharing and the teaching. He said the most helpful one is, of course, the teaching. The second one is it mindfulness, awareness. Is it? This one has helped him tremendously. Oh. And when he mentioned that, I suddenly inside rejoiced. That's why I say I must share with you. He said, this world, if you don't take care of karma, based on what I share with you, you really, really have a lot of problems. He said, this mundane mind, this heedless thinking mind, you don't take care of karma, you really will be hit. And a lot of people will do all this funny thing to you. Yeah? As he go through his business, his life and all those things, there was a lot of situations that actually create a lot of what they call mental agitation, reaction and suffering and stirring if he don't have the Dhamma, if he don't have this mindfulness. He realized the moment this thing come, want to attack him, want to make his mind state disturbed and all those things. He just silenced his mind and developed this awareness, sati. And you know what happened? He came to his own self-realization. No? The moment he's aware, he can separate his mind from the mundane mind. No? That's how it doesn't affect him. No? And he becomes peaceful straight away. Then he realized this heedless thinking mind, because of delusion and wrong view, you cannot stop it without mindfulness. The only way to stop it and isolate it is with mindfulness, to silence. Don't do anything. Just, oh, he said it has helped him so much. Overcome so much of his business issue, problem and everything. That's why you must understand what sati is. That's why you must stabilize it until you can isolate your mundane mind, your thinking mind. So that this wrong view, this conditioning, acting according to memory and all things that agitate and stir and react to sense experience, all this can be cut out straight away. Then you can isolate your mind. You can stay your true mind. The moment you isolate and stay, that momentum that what they call heedless thinking, they straight away get cut off. Then to start the thinking process again, like I say, that momentum not there, is more difficult. That's why you have more and more moment of this mindfulness and awareness, it will isolate your mind. Then from a heedless way of living life, you will slowly transform to become a heedful. And this is what mindfulness is all about. Straight away, the moment you are silent, you will isolate. And you can go into the silence more and more. Your mind will settle down. Then you will revert back to the true mind. That's how you develop the silent mind, the meditative mind, the ability to meditate. So all this is what the teaching is all about. That's why Sakyamuni has to come earlier, so that this teaching is here, so that we can continue with the understanding, the cultivation. Because he knew the sasana will last, even though 500 years shorter, at least 4,005. So 4,005, he got a lot of time. Manasana. That's why by the time 2000 or 2006, Mahayana established. And what they want to do is to plant the seed of Bohi for people to go this way, so that there are more and more of this cultivator that can come later on. And if we continue to evolve, our progress, we will become star beings. You look at the way we progress scientifically, materialistically, we are so advanced within the last 30, 40 years. If we go on like that for another, not to say century, maybe a few centuries or 1,000 years, do you know how advanced our human species will be if we don't destroy ourselves or get destroyed somehow because of technology, because of nuclear capability and all those things? We would have penetrated many, many things. Even the field of consciousness, they will go into it. The pure energy, they will develop it. Then later on, of course, you got Android and other things. Then consciousness can be understood and move. So all this can become possible. So this golden era or golden age, like the new world that Eckhart mentioned, is possible because there are a lot of these great beings that come, like Jay Krishnamurti and other things, that somehow play their role and complement all this. So this is how Sakyamuni has to come earlier. This teaching has to come. Then at that time, like I explained, why he doesn't want to elect somebody to succeed him. Because the condition was not conducive. And the best is still follow the teaching, the Sutta and the Vinaya. That is still the best. They are your teacher. That's why you use the word, he who sees the Dhamma sees him. So if you follow his teaching, you will never go wrong. That's the reason why at that time he doesn't want to appoint anyone, because there is this possibility of infighting. It's just like Fifth Patriarch, you would have asked, why don't he officially appoint Hui Ning and just tell them all to keep quiet? He cannot, understand? Because society is such. He is a southerner, he is a barbarian, and he just came. In Cantonese, they say, Mfok Leia, understand? In English, what you call? Wufu Nia. English, how you say? They cannot agree with you, understand? No, not no respect. They cannot agree with your decision, understand? But the Cantonese word is very good. Not convincible. No, they cannot agree with your decision because they are so conditioned. That is what they are conditioned into at that time. Society is like that. So you cannot, it's just like, take for example Malaysia. You dare to appoint a non-Malay Prime Minister, no? At this point of time, you cannot. There is no way. So, there is a reason why Fifth Patriarch asked him to go and lie low wait for causes and condition before he arrives. So Sakyamuni is definitely a lot more wiser than the Vipassana. That's why he knew what is to be done. So all this, when you have the understanding, you will come to understand it's meant to be. This is the way things are. It has to be. Okay? So hopefully, it can help you clear your doubt. Because this doubt, you must root it out. Because all doubt come from the mundane mind, the egoic mind, the thought that created all this. They are not real. Doubt is not intrinsic to your true mind. Yeah, yeah. Thomas, yes.
Matthew, isn't that accord and flow also?
Which one? Which part?
The part that the fifth patriarch didn't appoint.
That is 100% echo and flow. Because he is so wise. That's why I told you that night at your Thursday class after you asked. Echo and flow means they understand the sign will come. That's why he reluctantly accepted Hui Ning. Understand or not? Where he knew if you were to put him in the assembly and accept him like that, a lot of people will have strong reaction towards what he has done. But he's from the south and illiterate them all. So he just like keep him protected from all this unnecessary misunderstanding. That's why he said, okay, you talk too much, you straight away go to the kitchen. He sent him there. It's a polite way of accepting him and not causing misunderstanding and confusion. Then when he was at the kitchen doing all those things, he knew, because he knew he has the potential. But from the way he answered, the Vipassana knew this guy has his condition to be here. Then he let the condition unfold. At first he wanted to pass the patriarchship to Sun Siu. You remember after Sun Siu wrote that poem, he called Sun Siu in. And what did he tell Sun Siu? Can you remember? What did he tell Sun Siu? You have to write another poem. But before he asked him to write another poem, what did he tell him? You are at the gate of enlightenment. You don't know how to go in. So he said, you go and write me another poem. So that it can reflect the understanding. Then I will pass the patriarchship to you. He actually was very, very intent on passing the patriarchship to him. Well, he is the most appropriate, understand not? And everybody will agree if he get it. Well, they already say nobody should write except Sun Siu. So that was the condition then. But then, he never knew, the fifth patriarch also never knew after that, Hui Ning going to write another poem next to him and completely knock off Sun Siu's poem. Completely knock it out. Then, after that, the fifth patriarch knew already. The patriarchship must go to Hui Ning. That's why he went to the kitchen. And all these are meant to be. That's why he echoed and flow. He didn't go against nature. He didn't believe his thought process. He didn't allow the belief system and the conditioning at that time to take over. That's why he did what he has to do. And he sent Hui Ning off. And it's meant to be. After that, Hui Ning end up with the robber. And then just now, the Gowan part, you remember? They go and quote, say, Sun Siu sent a lot of to kill, to assassinate him. Is it true? I don't think he did that. It's all the disciple or the colleague, where they want to fight the patriarchship to take back the bat and the robe, where they think Sun Siu deserve it, they go out on their own, I think. He is a very good cultivator, but at that level, at that time, that's why he don't have all those evil intentions. I don't think so. That's why he was accepted by the Empress, Wu Zitian. He was invited to see Wu Zitian. He was consulted. And he was, I think, one of the four or five that the Emperor consulted. that time was the Empress Dowager. Then, oh, that day I told somebody, the Huarian sect, you see, after Hui Ning, he himself passed the patriarchship down. Then the next one, I think Padmasri, the complete enlightenment sutta that day, the discussion, you remember with Mimi, Yan Jue Jing, the complete enlightenment sutta. You know how this complete enlightenment sutta come about? You don't know. Oh, never heard. Yan Jue Jing. It's a very good sutta. Mimi bought this book in English. Commentary by Master Chen Yan, Chen Yan Fa Shi, the late Chen Yan Fa Shi, Fa Gu San one. And the Mandarin one he gave to my wife, the English one he gave to me, and the foreword he wrote was very good. Tuesday class I will read to you. He really, on behalf of all Kailamita, he make that offering. Then one day I took the book and read, because I also don't know what this book is all about. I realized it was such a beautiful book. It talks about the complete enlightenment as taught by Sakyamuni Buddha, because there were these 12 great bodhisattvas, very, very established and famous bodhisattvas. They had a session with him. This was the dialogue between these 12 great bodhisattvas with Sammasambuddha. And out of the 12, Kuan Yin is there, Pusian is there, Manjushri is there. Then all the other very great virtue ones, they are all there. And through that dialogue, they wrote this sutta. And this sutta come about because after Hui Ning, his lineage branch off. Well, after that, they split into many lineages. China split after Xu, even after Hui Ning, they got many lineage established. Because Shen Xiu side also established, where he supposed to inherit also. But the official one is Hui Ning. Then from Hui Ning go down, the next one, I thought it was Shen Xiu. It was Shen Hui. I read wrongly. So Shen Hui. The Shen is correct, S-H-E-N. Then Hui is H-U-I, I think. H-U-I, not Xiu, not S-H-U-I. So pass on to Shen Hui. Then Shen Hui pass on to four more. Then the last, the fifth, or the sixth one, six from Hui Ning is, how you pronounce this? Zongmi. 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 Master. Zongmi, I think. He was the one who is responsible for this sudden enlightenment, complete enlightenment sutta. At his time, he wrote it. And because he got very special affinity, when this sutta came about, it was already in the Maya, but it was seldom mentioned, and nobody wrote about it, no commentary on it, until this monk, this patriarch came about. Then this patriarch, very funny, when he was born, he like got great affinity with this sutta. The moment he heard this sutta, he understand this sutta. Then he can expand on it, expound on it, and do a lot of things. That's how the commentary come about because of him. They call it Mandarin Yuan Jue Jing, the complete enlightenment sutta. So all this, it has its condition to arise. Then, like Sister Padmasri mentioned, accord and flow, the meaning is very, very deep. You must have that wisdom and the understanding to see the sign, to understand nature, Otherwise, you cannot echo and flow. Otherwise, it is knowledge, theoretical. So, the answer to your question is yes. Fifth patriarch has the understanding and the wisdom. That's why he allow it. It's called echo and flow. And it's a good example of echo and flow. He never go against nature. Okay? Yeah. What's the time now? Pastor Ingby.
One more is this. Hui Neng is born without a mundane mind.
Yes, yeah.
So how can he learn how to use mundane mind without attachment? There's no mundane mind for him to use.
Okay, very good. You see, when you come with that type of mind, your nature has to be exceptionally very, very different. That's why he has reached that level of cultivation where he can make that type of aspiration and that, what they call, you call it pure wish. To have this type of condition, it's just like Amitabha Buddha. He vowed to establish pure land. And for you to have this parami ability to come out with this type of capability to reflect your pure wish until it become a reality, your parami has to be exceptional. That's why I always share you all. If Amitabha can fulfill his vow and become Sammasambuddha, there is no more other Sammasambuddha who cannot fulfill his vow. So for Hui Neng, this type of aspiration is quite easy to establish. Oh, that's why we have to wait till Thursday class. You remember Sakyamuni used the sutta? Sankara Upapati Sutta. How to develop the understanding to make aspiration for reappearance in other realm or become enlightened being. So if you know how to modify it, you make the aspiration whenever you come, the mundane mind is not there. You will come with the true mind. And it will happen. But you must have that parami, understand? Not everybody can make that type of POV. I also cannot do it now. If I can, I will have done it. Understand? You must have that type of parami. But I can tell you, when I came, until the age of 6, there was no mundane mind. This life, when I come. But the mundane mind come about when my parents transfer me back to that notorious because that time I don't know anything. If maybe like Hui Neng, I become illiterate woodcutter, then I will continue. Yeah? I will not be contaminated. Understand? Then the moment I hear truth, then maybe it can be. But I don't think so. Not likely. So this is what nature is all about. When you have the understanding, you know how to make use of that type of parami to arise that type of condition, it can happen. Then when it happens, you see, he himself also doesn't know that other being has this mundane mind. He don't have. He also don't know. Until later on, when he heard that thing, and he asked that that merchant who recited the Diamond Sutta, he said, "What is it that you were reciting?" Then this merchant told him about the sutta. He said, "This is the Diamond Sutta." Then he asked him, "You are illiterate, woodcutter. How come you can understand this sutta?" Then you know what Hui Neng told him or not? "I don't know. The moment I heard the stanza, the mind must have no dwelling. This nature starts to understand profoundly." Oh, then the merchant straightaway said, "You must have great affinity with the Buddha Dhamma. Otherwise, you cannot understand this sutta." Then he asked the merchant, "Where can I learn this sutta? From whom can I learn this sutta?" That's why he became very interested. Then he said, "You have to go to see the fifth patriarch at the temple there, Hongmei and all that." Then the merchant was very generous and very kind. He decided to sponsor him and ask him to go. They also volunteered to help to look after the mother and all those things. So that's how Hui Neng can have that ability. Then what he need from the fifth patriarch was, well, it's like initially when you have this, before you connect back, like I said, karma, immediately you inherit. Well, you are born of it, the Buddha already said. Then you have, you inherit it. You are born of karma, add to your karma. Then you are conditioned as a part of your karma, yeah? Every now and then. Then you are what you are because of your karma. Every moment, every... So all this karma, immediate, when the form of mind come, the five aggregate segmental life come, karma take effect. Then you inherit. That's why he has his karmic inheritance, his parami, to be born in what parent and what he already decided. That's why the name came with the tumang, you remember? The night he was born, the name came. And there were fragrant in the room when the mother gave birth and all those things. So this is his karmic inheritance from me. But his spiritual nature cannot come home. He cannot inherit home until he understands what this is. That's why the moment he understands the Diamond Sutta, that stanza, then it starts to connect. But it's not complete, not stabilized yet. That's why he need to go for Dhamma class. He need to listen to somebody who can guide him and teach him. That's why he went to the fifth patriarch. And the moment he went to the fifth patriarch just explained a few things. He will understand one. You remember I told you? If since you have met me at that time, let's say I around, he would have become enlightened straight away. I would have the ability to explain to him. Then you ask me the question, why the fifth patriarch don't want to do that? Because he echoed and flow. So it's all like that. Because of Huineng. If Huineng don't arrive, he would have taught him. But because Huineng is there, he don't have a chance. Not to say fifth patriarch cannot teach him. He could have explained it the way I explained to you. Then he will straight away awaken to great awakening. Then he will write another poem. But it's meant to be. So that is the reason why a lot of things, when you come to understand, then you can have the understanding why it has to be this way. When nature is such that it has to be such. That's why sitting as they are, that's the way things are. Condition like that, things will be like that. And when condition unfold, you have to understand those that have the supreme nature or beautiful nature, when they come, they are very different. The condition is all set. Like I told you this lie, I never do anything. This nature come, this form and mind come. This form and mind is for this nature to come. That's why the vow, the aspiration, all is already set. That's why it just echo and flow. It will know what to do. Then through the understanding of the sign, this form and mind will evolve, will become what it is based on the condition there and then. And this is how Huineng will move, because his karma will bring him all those conditions to listen to that one. Then the fifth patriarch will meet up with him, then will pass him the understanding, the teaching, and the patriarchate. Then how he has to wait for the appropriate condition to come out to share. All is already intended, or you can say it's meant to be. I wouldn't call it predestined, because it's meant to be. Then because of Huineng, because of his teaching, that's why we have our spiritual trip this September. And this spiritual trip is going to be very interesting, I tell you. From the way the itinerary evolved, we are going to visit a lot of this beautiful temple, especially Kuan Yin. There's a lot of Kuan Yin temple there, I don't know why. The Kuan Yin Si and all those things. A lot of this there. That's why it's meant to be finally. Then, because of Six Patriarch, this sudden teaching came about. The teaching that bring you to the true mind. And that is the beginning on it. We are in the Yuan Jue Jing, complete enlightenment. It was also mentioned, but they use another word, they use these three type of word. They say, you have to cultivate wisdom through samatha, sahampati, and dayan. This one I think is Mahayana word. The third phase is you completed the cultivation. Your nature like cannot move already, cannot change, suchness already. That is the final one, dayan. They call it dayan chana. Chan. I think in Japan they use another word. Japan is zazen. Zazen. Then in Mahayana tradition is called zen. But the Mandarin word is chan. Chan. Then the first one is samatha. They call it ting. But I don't know why they use the word samatha. But the samatha is actually ting. Ting is samadhi. It's samadhi. That one is in the Yan Jie Jing, I think chapter 7 or 1. He said that one is no thought, aware, just aware, no thought. Then after that, you use that to cultivate, to realize noma. That is sahampati. But sahampati, to the Theravada tradition, the word is for cessation. That's why they call it nirodha sahampati. Then only the final one is dayan. But these three terms are not in the Theravada teaching. They are in the Pali description, I think. But they define it differently. Where they got this word samatha and sahampati. But dayan they don't have. Okay? Yeah, I hope. I answer already. Yeah.
Sorry to take up
your time. No problem.
Hui Neng has.
Yeah, he made the aspiration to be born without the mundane mind.
He has a true mind already, without mundane mind.
Yeah.
Why does he need to learn to use a mundane mind without attachment?
No.
He already has without mundane mind. Why he need?
No, he was born without the mundane mind.
Yeah. Understand? He came to a great awakening because. Yeah. He knows how to use the mundane mind without attachment after his vichya.
You see, after he transformed to the great awakening, means he is born without the mundane mind. Means like the mundane mind collapse. Understand? It's just like this line, my mundane mind collapse. Ever since 89 until now, I don't have the mundane mind. But I need to use that supra mundane mind. Understand? The super mundane mind is also a condition arising mind, but it is non-grasping, understand? You understand? That's why it's not. Without mind, how can I share with you? Understand? That one, like no movement inside that one. It's very fine. That's why I told you I have to learn to use that one also. Remember? After the mundane mind collapse. For 5 or 7 days, I was amazed. How come like that? All of a sudden, that nature shine forth. Then everything that I never see before, but everything is still the same, But suddenly I see, Before that, how come? Cannot see. Because of the mundane mind. But when this nature shine forth, everything become like very different, Wow, so I mean, how come like that? Then like inside, no mind, nothing at all, There is no movement, nothing. No, that type of gross mundane mind, the conscious mind, nothing inside there. Pure. You cannot talk about it. Then suddenly from inside, cannot be. If no mind, how can I know thing? Understand? How can I still can perceive and do all those things. But except the movement is now so different. But this mind is the supramundane mind which is so different. It's like no mind inside there. Then I have to learn to use it. And I someone mentioned, you remember, this mind, you cannot, very difficult for you to do mindfulness on. It's not like that mind. That mind is very easy on, the mundane mind. To be mindful, to be aware, the mundane mind is very easy on. But this one, like no mind, you cannot stay with it. That's why this one, you don't need to do one. Because the understanding, the wisdom, then you just use it. That's why he learned how to use that supramundane mind. That's why, no? You understand? That is the mind for you to come. Understand?
Now I'm confused.
The super mundane mind is when the mundane mind collapse. Understand? When there is no more grasping. The mundane mind is the upadana khandas, the grasping mind, before the wisdom. I explained to you all before. You see, when you develop the understanding, the wisdom, your wisdom energy is so fine, so fine. You know what is fine or not? Very fine. This vibration is so fine until finally the mundane mind, which is very gross, cannot stay. That's why it has to collapse. Because it's too fine, understand? And when this one come out, that one cannot stay. That's why it collapses. And when it collapses, that supramundane mind that come out, which is your nature, is like no mind inside there. It's like nothing inside there. The whole movement is like no resistance or nothing. Not like last time. Wow, last time, a lot of things inside there. Very gross one. Very, very, I don't know how to describe it to you. I also don't know. Because that mundane mind, a lot of images one. This one, no image one. No image one. It's not only empty, it's pure. Understand? Pure. Everything is pure. There is no image. You can say arupa. Arupa, formless mind. It's like a formless mind. No image one, no form, nothing one. But that movement is so fine until... That's why I can tell you I didn't do anything. Because the nature is still. And this one also, no movement inside there. Nothing. But without this mind, how can I share? How can I perceive? How can I talk? Then I realize, this one can do all these things. But it's so fine, I have to learn how to use it. It took me a while, you know, a few months to learn how to use it. You know. But after that, it just don't want to do anything. You know. It just amazed. It see everything as it is. You know. Everything just the way it is. You know. And that nature just see like that. With the true mind most of the time. But then I can still remember my name and all those things. Then how did it retrieve all this memory? Because the brain is still there, understand? No? But the pure mind, the super mundane mind, is so fine, it has to learn how to use all this again. That's why I have to slowly, it took me 2 months or 3 months, I think, to go back to normal, to become a normal human being again. Yeah, during that time, I also don't know what to tell you. I was working. But you go through that phase, very strange one, very strange. That's why I say, book also never write. How to describe and share all this? People will get frightened and panic. Yeah?
That means maybe Hui Ning is using his, learning to use his supramundane mind without attachment. Whereas I interpret it mundane mind, so I'm sorry. Maybe it's useful to me. How to use my mundane mind without attachment at my level.
Yeah. What I need to add on to is the fifth page here explained to him that time he already knew his super mundane mind, no attachment one. Understand not? When he said you must learn how to use it and yet not deluded by it, understand not? It's for him to understand that normal human being got mundane mind one. Understand not? Although you don't have but normal human being have. That's why you have to teach. Understand? You cannot assume that everybody is like you. Like my nature, initially, when after 15 years, 2004, I came out to share. You remember? I thought you all need Dhamma. So that time you all not around, the first batch. I share the Dhamma. I realized hardly anybody understand. See, that is the reason why I reverse back everything and start from scratch again. Yeah, you cannot assume that everybody is like me. You know? But initially, I thought you are like me, you know. Very easy. The moment I expound, you sure awaken one. But on my own, I understand it and develop the understanding and awakening. Then you all, given this condition, after I explain so clearly, but somehow cannot go in and out. People are not ready. The mundane mind is so different. The karmic thing is so different. That's why I find it, how come so difficult to share with these people? And it takes a while. But like I said, you all, you are not ordinary because you have your parami. Otherwise, you cannot have this condition to understand all these things. And to be born in the sasana already very unique. And to be born as a human being who has the ability to come into contact with the Buddha Dhamma is even more rare. That's why 人生难得，佛法难闻。 人生经已得，佛法经已闻。 Then what are you doing? If someone don't want to make use of it to get it right, this window, so that in future you don't have to worry anymore, it's up to you. Understand? Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. So today no meditation, as usual. Okay, I think we end here so that we can have our discussion. Okay, anybody else got any question? Or anything that you want to discuss or maybe share? Oh, wait, I had to accept a call. Yeah, those who need to go for toilet break, you can go. You got any other question or anything that you want to report on, you can. Your meditation or whatever. We still got another 20 minutes, or 18 minutes. Yes. Eng Bi. Can. No problem. Then no need to record, In the meantime, any other question? Because Sister Lee waiting for Eng Bi to come out from the washroom. Pass the mic to Chin Hao.
Hey, Brother Teo.
Yeah.
I have a question I would like to check with you. Is it? Maybe you can share with us.
Yeah.
I notice usually the closest to us,
like
the family members, our loved ones, it's easy to trigger our emotions, our tempers, things.
Yeah.
But whereas those that distant away, like friends, you know, we are more easy to be courtesy to them, you know.
Oh, okay.
What is,
so what is your question?
My question is like, how do we have this kind of like habitual, and how do we overcome it?
Okay. You're off the mic. So, Chin Hao's question is, he came to the understanding that people who are close to him, especially family members, he tend to be more emotional. But when it comes to like friends who are not so close, or people who are not so close, it tend to be less affected by them. He say, how come human beings have this type of tendency? But his question is, in particular, his own mind state that has this type of tendency. This is what the Buddha meant by attachment. You understand? Attachment means what? You have attachment to that person. Why? Well, you think he has relationship with you. You think he could be your loved one, your parents, your brothers, your sister, or somebody close to you. That's why when they are in argument with you, or there are some misunderstanding between you and them, you tend to be affected. Just like I used to share with some of you all, one of the early days Dhamma friend, she, after 3 years of learning under my sharing, she suddenly one day after the class, he put up her hand and asked this question. She shared her experience. She said, "Brother, a lot of things that you have taught us, she already developed the understanding, and she has a lot of gratitude." She said, "That's why now, most of the time she is peaceful, not affected by people, situation anymore. But there's one thing she cannot let go of. She cannot deal." He said, "My two kids, he got two children. Both of them are boys. He said, these two monkeys is my greatest teacher. Every time make her angry, emotional, and like affected." So she also asked the same question. How can we overcome this type of attachment, clinging, grasping, and holding on? Then you cannot tell her that they are not what you think. You may think you are a mother, you give birth to them, they are your children. Understand? But she's going to tell you, "You mean I give birth to them, they are not my children?" Then how are you going to answer her? Understand? So the understanding lies here. The law of karma applies to conditioned world. The conditioned world, through law of karma, recognizes relationship. That's why within the conditioned world, there is such thing as parents, children, son, spouse, loved ones. Exists. The law of karma recognizes. But when you develop the meditative understanding, which is the spiritual understanding, when you realize the unconditioned, which is the Buddha Dhamma, then you realize these are all not what you think, not what the thought think. There is he no you, he no me. The form and mind is not you. That's why they are empty. The five aggregate of form and mind are empty. Because they exhibit the characteristics of impermanent, leading to suffering, you attach and cling. And because they are impermanent, it's empty, non-self, not a permanent unchanging entity. So all this need to be understood. Within the conditioned world, there is its own reality. Within the unconditioned, there is no more of this reality. That's why within the unconditioned, he know you, he know me. If the form and mind of your own doesn't belong to you, then how can there be loved ones? Like the Buddha said, my son, my well, my loved ones. All this only the fools lament. For that very body doesn't belong to him, wherein son, wherein well, wherein all those things. So this understanding, you need to reflect on it, contemplate on it, awaken to it. Then only you can have this ability to free your mind. Means you come to this world with a form and mind, karmically conditioned out. This form and mind has a duty towards your loved one. And this duty you cannot neglect. That's why Dhamma, you have to understand both sides. Then, when you do your duty, it's just like the fifth patriarch Tohining. You use the form and mind as a vehicle and a tool to come and do your duty. But you must not be deluded by it. Understand? Means you don't go and develop the delusion to attach and cling, to think that this is your son. Karma-wise, yes, you have your duty to fulfill. As a parent, you have to do your duty. Or as a son, you have to do your duty towards your mother, towards your parent, your sisters, your brother, your good friend, or whatever. So make use of the form and mind to do the duty, but no delusion. You do with the understanding that no mark of a self-doing, no mark of a friend or somebody that you are trying to love or help or whatever. So this understanding will enable you to live life beautifully. Because you understand the unconditioned and the conditioned world. And you understand that if I agree or form in mind, it's not real, not you. Without this, you cannot break free. There's a human being and cultivator are very confused. Because on the one side, the Buddha say non-self, empty, impermanent. On the other side, law of karma recognize this, recognize that. There is such a thing as loved one and honesty. There's a human being become very confused. Lay people become very confused. Cultivator also become very confused. On the one side, the Buddha said, anatta, non-self. On the other side, he said, daily contemplation. I am born of my karma, heir to my karma, conditioned, supported. I am what I am because then the I exists. But the other side of the teaching say, non-self, anatta. He know you, he know me. That's why they become very confused. Because when it's law of karma, it recognizes relationship. It refers to the form and mind, which is not you. But this one has its own reality. This one has its own condition behind its arising. That's why Dhamma need to be understood and penetrated with wisdom. That's what the fifth patriarch's message is all about, the winning. Understand? So your attachment comes from the self-delusion that believe that they are your loved one. That's why I give the other analogy, example, very easy to understand. If your neighbor bought a new car, suddenly the wife drive out, open the gate, then bang. Then you laugh, because you are the neighbor. Understand? But when you are the husband, when you saw that, or your wife come in and tell you, sorry honey, I bang your car. I tell you, you get very, very agitated, afflicted, and unhappy. And you start to react and stir your mind and tell your wife, oh, stupid fellow, why you do this? Don't you know it's a new car? I paid so much for it. This is what human attachment will lead to. Human delusion will lead to. The reality is, happened already. School also like that. Don't school also like that. Learn from it. Do what you have to do. Resolve it. Settle it amicably. Need to claim insurance, claim insurance. Why you want to make a fuss out of it? Get angry with it, emotional over it. Things are just the way they are. Meant to be will be. It has its condition from the past, like the Buddha said. Whatever that arises, there are causes and conditions behind. And these causes and conditions, the Buddha has explained, it's mainly karma. That's it. Finish. With that right view, you will know how to live. Then you will not have that emotion, attachment. Because this is all born out of the egoic mind that is still entangled, deluded. Okay? Yeah. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Ah, Miss Lee, now your turn. Ingbi is back. He want to share the vegetarian part. He said, off the record. He don't want to record. Is it mandatory for Mahayana to be vegetarian? Is it mandatory? Oh, it's mandatory. Oh, okay. Yeah, thank you for sharing. Just from the Mahayana perspective that she tried to explain things to you. You see, like I said, It's nothing to do with right or wrong. It's your personal understanding. So when you understand, that is more important. Like the Buddha said, it's not what you eat that make you pure. If it's what you eat that make you pure, all the herbivores would have become pure beings. Understand? It's your heart. Whether you have spirituality or understanding depends on your heart. If your heart is pure, you are pure. If your heart is not pure, whatever you do, no meaning. Not much meaning. But if you take vegetarian because you understand and there is a condition behind, well and good, go ahead. Because you do with your understanding. Your condition is such. But if you do just because you heard people say and believe that as vegetarian you are more pure or more compassionate, then you better go ahead and find out for yourself. Understand? So the point that we need to understand is finally it boils down to our understanding. That's why the Buddha, he didn't insist on that precept. It's because there are reasons for him not to introduce. But he did qualify what are the pure meat that you can eat. And that is in the Theravada teaching. That's why the Theravada monk who hold the precept, they will know which is allowable, which is not allowable. My teacher Ajayantra, when he go Pindapat, he saw the curry with the thing. He will know one. He will ask, "Is this? You purposely slaughter and cook and offer? If it's not, he take. That's not. If it's kill for you, he won't take. That's not. Then if he hear the killing, or perceive the killing, he also won't take. That's why in Mandarin they say 不见杀, 不闻杀, 不为我杀. These are the 三净肉, three types of pure meat. It's not kill for me. I don't see the killing. I don't perceive the killing. So these are called the three conditions behind the food that you can take. They call it the San Jing Ro, three types of pure meat. You have to satisfy the three conditions. Okay, we can end, 6 o'clock. You can rejoice. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, we will do the sharing of merit, transfer of merit, then we end. Let us recall to mind all of the wholesomeness that we have developed over the past 2 to 3 hours, then we shall share all this merits with all beings, starting with the devas. Akasata ca bumata deva naga mahindika punyang tang anamoditwa cirang rakan tulo kasasana ita wata camehi Sampadan punya sampadan Sabbe deva anumodantu Sabba sampati siddhiya Idang menya tinang hotu Sukita hontunya tayo Idang menya tinang hotu Sukita hontunya tayo Idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontunya tayo imina punyang kamena mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yawa nivana patia sadu sadu sadhu. Okay, pay respect mindfully to Lord Buddha, Kuan Yin Bodhisattva, and all the worthy ones.